You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Ha, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario.
Hello and welcome to the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. That was Pete Fountain with Walking the Floor Over You, with that signature New Orleans Creole jazz style. And that's the band that will be playing with us tonight to bring in the Mardi Gras festivities. It may not look like a usual festival day outside, but with this much snow, it's a great reason to make your Tuesday extra fat. But you know what? Yeah, I'm sorry I said that. You know, I think we need to stop day shaming. We have to stop day shaming Tuesday. Tuesday looks fine to me. You be you, Tuesday. No, hashtag Fat Tuesday. But, yes, Fat Tuesday, where a $1 pair of beads will accomplish the same thing a $100 lobster may get you on Valentine's Day. If Emma Watson made a movie about Mardi Gras, I bet you it would be called Beauty and the Beads. Oh yes, I love Mardi Gras with every beat of my heart. And that's why we brought in Pete Fountain and his New Orleans band with us here tonight, playing alongside Steve Martin later on, and we have a special interview with the National Green Party leader, Annamae Paul. All that and more coming up on 101.5 The Hawks, Johnny Athens Hour. We'll be right back. The Green Party of Canada has been around for 38 years, and in that time it has grown the idea of building a green economy and a nation that is cognizant of its environment. The most forthcoming problems of today, global warming, species endangerment and extinction, pollution, and geopolitics are what shape our politics at home and abroad. Annemie Paul has been with the Green Party for a few years, but her impacts on the party and its support base are noticeable. The party in recent years has drawn more attention and managed to steadily climb its ranks on a national and provincial level. A large portion of her career has been focused on international affairs, starting out in the Ontario Legislature and working around the globe to learn about politics elsewhere and how they can affect us here at home. Without further ado, may I introduce Annemie Paul.
So my first question is, in the recent by-election for Toronto 2nd, you placed 2nd, and notably growing your proportion of the vote over 25%. So what do you think are the major factors for such large growth in such short time?
I believe people were just looking for change, positive change. Our slogan during the campaign was to be daring. And by that, we wanted people to dare to believe that things could be better, that the community could have real representation, that many of the challenges that had been left unaddressed for many years could finally be tackled. And there are a lot of challenges in that community. And so people were really ready for a positive vision. And I believe that that was part of it. They really wanted to be part of a positive vision for the future of their community. I wasn't known very well. I had run in the riding in 2019. But even with the leadership race, I was not known even when I won. And so really most of it was just about having a really great campaign that was incredibly well organized. And just having, I think, a very strong message to share with people in the community.
And so not only that growth, but in the past federal election, the Greens managed to get their largest success yet with 3 seats in the House. Provincially, the Green Party of PEI is the official opposition. And policies across the country, federally and provincially, have been inspired by Green Party initiatives. So now that you're leader, how do you plan to maintain and develop the party's recent success?
It is very exciting. In fact, even this week, we saw the Green Party in PEI having tremendous success around universal basic income. They introduced a bill that passed unanimously calling on PEI to get to net zero by 2040. With real accountability mechanisms. And so Greens are just making a difference all over the country. And for me, building on that means making sure that I'm reaching out as much as possible to people who, again, as I said, just like in Toronto Centre, people who maybe have never voted Green before, but recognize that change is necessary, that want to be part of a positive vision of the future, that want to be excited again about what public policy can do in terms of protecting people. And so, you know, whenever you have a new leader, it's a chance for that new conversation. And I've been working really hard along with the rest of the Green Party to use this opportunity to start those conversations and to get people excited, even in the midst of a really difficult time.
And as you had mentioned, there is a big will for change. In that last federal election, we saw a very divided Canada in terms of votes. And yet with recent political trends, such as the exposure of systematic racism and a widening between the right and the left, how as a leader do you plan to kind of unite the country?
I believe we are very united. The pandemic really helped to underline that. It helped to underline the ways that we are truly interconnected. Helped us to remember that we all depend on each other, even at the most basic level of our health. My health affects the health of the people in my community, and their health affects people even on the other side of the country. And so one of the main lessons of the pandemic absolutely is that we are interconnected and that we are stronger when we work together. Another lesson from the pandemic is that people in Canada really want to see much more collaboration and cooperation between political parties, between levels of government. We saw how much was accomplished when that happened. And no one is interested, including me, in going back to that kind of hyper-partisanship. So, you know, this was definitely a moment where, you know, Canadians have said, people in Canada have said loud and clear that we want to be united. We want to take care of each other. We want to take care of our communities. It's not every person for themselves the way that we sometimes were led to imagine things were. And that's something that is incredibly encouraging. It's very inspiring. And for the Green Party, absolutely, we want to support that. And I'm hoping that it's a reason that people will vote for the Greens in the next election, because we really are committed to collaboration, to cooperation. We really do try to find common cause with the other political parties wherever we can. And so when you elect more Greens, you have a much better chance of having a positive, constructive atmosphere in your parliament.
So I know you've also talked about on the topic of a kind of united Canada, that there's a kind of democratic deficit, as has been stated by the party and yourself. But what exactly does that mean? What is a democratic deficit?
There are many examples of that. We really need to be looking toward a democratic renewal. So first, we've seen, and you know, one of the reasons I was so attracted to the Green Party is we have seen over the years a continuous concentration, further concentrating of power in the hands of a few, particularly in the leaders' offices of the other political parties. And that is not healthy for democracy. It's also not healthy the way in which the link between members of parliament and the constituents who elected them has also been very frayed, where the loyalty of that member of parliament is first and foremost to their political party, as opposed to the people who elected them. And then also our political system, our electoral system, doesn't do us any favors either. Under our first past the post system, we were left with the feeling that the West is extremely disengaged or disaffected. But when we look closer, we see that about a third of people on the prairies voted for other parties other than the Conservatives, and they did not get the representation. And so, you know, it also creates disunity where none necessarily exists. So we need to address all of those things if we're going to renew our democracy and close the democratic deficit.
So as part of that, does that include electoral reform? Is that something you advocate?
It does. It does indeed. It is definitely a core value of the Green Party. We know that systems with proportional representation, they're more diverse, and diversity creates better public policy because you have a variety of perspectives contributing to the development of public policy. We know that the voter turnout is higher in countries that have proportional representation. The nature of PR national assemblies means that they tend to be more cooperative and collaborative because you're more often having to work with parties across party lines. People are more engaged in systems that have PR. And as you know, in the case of Canada and our federation, it gives us the opportunity to make sure that we have a variety of interests and voices being represented across the regions in a way that we just can't under a first past the post system.
So let's say hypothetically, it's the next federal election and the Green Party has found its majority and you are now prime minister. The country's going through COVID recovery.
Loving it. Keep going.
What would be some of your immediate actions in office? What would Canadians or should Canadians expect?
The very first thing that until we have absolutely ensured that we have, you know, put COVID down for good and that we're not going to be in another wave, is making sure that people in Canada are protected. Every single day, we should be waking up, myself, other politicians at every level of government. We should be waking up every day until this pandemic is over saying, what can we do today to make sure that people in Canada are protected? What can we do today that we didn't do yesterday that would make a difference? So if I were the Prime Minister in January or February or before, we have, let's say, an effective treatment that is widely distributed, and we have arrived at the point where enough people are immune so that we can breathe again, that would be my top priority. And then, you know, given that we do have several vaccines that look like they're on track to be distributed next year, the next thing really is to focus on the recovery, which we should be planning for now and which most wealthy countries have already put their plans in place for, I mean, months ago. We need to know exactly where we're going to be investing our stimulus money to make sure that we're in better shape next time, that we close our social safety net, that we tackle the climate emergency. And we can do both. We can have a really strong COVID response and at the same time plan for the post-pandemic recovery, which should be green. It should be green because that is actually our fastest way back. That is our fastest way to help our economy recover, to create the short-term jobs we're going to need to get our unemployment rate down. It will help us invest in the infrastructure we need to support a green economy, which has been described as the greatest economic opportunity of our time. So if we want to invest this money really wisely, those are the things we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on a green recovery, the way that they are in the European Union, in the United States, in New Zealand and parts of Asia. We should be doing exactly the same thing. And we should make sure that come the next big crisis, our social safety net is much stronger so that we don't immediately have to create brand new emergency benefit programs.
And Canada has had a blooming green economy for a while now. Two of the largest hurdles the country currently has is its transport services and the oil and gas industry. Mm. So what kind of things would the Green Party do nationally to help get those services and those industries on track with the rest of the economy?
Well, the fossil fuel sector has been very hard hit by the pandemic, and there aren't any expectations that it's going to recover any of the lost ground anytime soon, or maybe ever, but certainly not in the foreseeable future. And it is a sector that is in an irreversible decline because we are moving away from fossil fuels and towards renewables globally. This is not just a Canadian phenomenon. And so we really need to start planning now for how we make sure that regions that are still very heavily dependent upon fossil fuels and resource extraction in general, that they have alternatives. Because if we wait too long and we don't diversify those economies, then that's when you really put communities at risk. And it's really when you put provincial budgets at risk. So we want to see the federal government using the stimulus money that they announced. They talked about $100 billion in stimulus, and there probably will be even more. We want to see them investing in renewable energy, investing in clean technology, investing in green infrastructure to support a green economy. There should be a guaranteed livable income so that there's a safety net for workers in fossil fuel sectors as they transition to other jobs. But it's really a huge good news story. Fossil fuel workers are the most employable in the green economy. They're the ones that have the skills that are most useful in the renewable energy sector and the clean tech sector. And the jobs pay more and they don't require massive amounts of retraining. So if we seize this opportunity, it could just be tremendous and we could actually become a world leader.
And I know part of your platform as well was the carbon border for Canada. Mm. And seeing as how the nation has been having some continuous problems with China, and seeing how China is our third largest trade partner, and they also commit 28% approximately of global CO2 emissions, would something like a carbon border be a tough stance that on China, kind of like a double-edged sword?
Well, carbon borders are something that the European Union has made very clear they intend to introduce. The European Union as a bloc is the second largest economy in the world. The United States, President-elect Joe Biden, has also announced his intention of introducing a carbon border for the United States. So this is something that is going to happen. If our two biggest largest trading partners both decide that this is something that they want to do, then we definitely are going to have to jump on board. Otherwise, our businesses become uncompetitive. So, you know, this is something that I would love to see us uniting with the United States and Mexico to do, so that we have a North American carbon border. I think, you know, we saw in the Fed, the fall economic statement that the Liberals have now, you know, come to agree with this policy that I've been proposing for quite some time. They also want to explore negotiations on a North American carbon border. And so, you know, this is something that will create an incentive for other countries who want to trade with these two big trading blocks to make sure that they're producing in an environmentally friendly way. It's a way to make sure that they respect their climate commitments. And in the case of China, China is already ahead of us. They've already committed to net zero by 2050. They expect to have an entirely renewable energy, an electric bus fleet within the next, I think, I don't know, they remember the exact number of years, but very soon. They're almost there. They're the leader in solar technology. And so, you know, China is definitely investing very heavily in the green economy. And has made some very significant commitments to get to net zero. So we already have some catching up to do.
So one last question for you here. What does this position as leader, and what does being Canadian mean to you going forward?
Oh, being a Canadian is a tremendous source of pride for me. You know, my parents came from the Caribbean, and my mother in particular was always growing up such a Canadaphile. You know, this is a country that has just been such a wonderful place to live and grow and raise children. The people in Canada have such ingenuity, such courage, and we've seen so much of that on display during this pandemic, the generosity that people have had and their willingness to take care of each other. And so I feel like the best way that I can do honor to all of the things that are just the best in us is to help us to create a more just and sustainable future, and to take that spirit and to make sure that we do our part to tackle the climate emergency. I really believe that people in Canada are absolutely ready to do that. They believe in themselves. They really need political leadership that believes in them as well, and that believes that we can still do great things in this country. And I know that we can, and this is really the time for us to do that.
Well, Ms. Paul, I thank you very much again for reaching out and joining me today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, and best of luck. Take care.
Thank you.
A special thank you to Ms. Annamie Paul for joining us tonight. Coming up, Dean Martin, Steve Martin, No More Martins, and More Martins. I mean, No More Martins, but plenty more here on the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. But first, here's Pete Fountain with Jazz Me Blues on 101.5 The Hawk. Oh, And there they went, Jazzy Blues by Pete Found and his New Orleans band. Welcome back to the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. Wonderful, wonderful, and happy Mardi Gras. It is the day of festival. I wonder what they're doing over there in Brazil and New Orleans this year. I think Mardi Gras is probably one of the few things that isn't quite the same over Skype as it is in person. Who knows? I mean, something like Mardi Gras, I think, happens no matter what, and they find a way to do it. Down there, swinging through the streets of New Orleans, like, I don't know, Bourbon Street, perhaps Basin Street, and perhaps these streets are just riddled with the blues. Perhaps the Basin Street Blues. Yes, here she is. An honor to have her today, Ella Fitzgerald, with Basin Street Blues. Fitzgerald with the old switcheroo at the end there as Satchmo comes out of nowhere and takes right over. It was always a magical experience whenever Ella would just take on the role of another singer or even musician, and a wonderful talent to just be able to mimic all sorts of neat tricks and styles, and of course create her own worldly influential style. Now, last week we had on the Smothers Brothers, and I guess we felt we couldn't do much better this week, so rather than bring them back, we brought in their writer. Steve Martin worked as a writer on the Smothers Brothers show before it got canceled, And then he went on to build his own solo career and then come up as the bluegrass musician we know him as today. So he's decided to exhume a piece of work for us here, talking about faith, the French, and philosophy, just in case you wanted to keep it in theme for Mardi Gras.
Wouldn't it be weird if you died and you woke up and you were in heaven, just like they always told you? And everybody had wings on and pearly gates. Wouldn't you feel stupid? Oh, no!
You mean that this is what... Oh!
In college, they said this was all bullshit.
Well, I'll just come in and... What? You've been keeping records on me? Well, that wasn't so bad.
How many times did I take the Lord's name in vain?
Ooh.
1,000,006. Oh. Jesus Christ. It's so hard. It's so hard to believe in anything anymore. You know what I mean? It's like religion. I mean, you can't really take it seriously because it seems so mythological and it seems so arbitrary. And then it's on the other hand, science, you know, it's just pure empiricism, and by virtue of its method, it excludes metaphysics. And I guess I wouldn't believe in anything if it weren't for my lucky astrology mood watch. College. You feel so small, you know? You go to college, you study about guys like Leonardo, who did everything. A scientist, a great painter, a great architect, designer. And you feel like an idiot. And I wanted to, you know, expand my life in the way that Leonardo did, and that's why I took up juggling. I know what you're saying. You're saying, Steve, where do you find time to juggle? Well, I juggle in my mind. Whoops. Okay. But people look at guys like the Mona Lisa. Leonardo's Mona Lisa, and they think, oh, that's not so great. But not a lot of people know this. The Mona Lisa was painted with one stroke. Here's what...
How's this?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. Okay. Okay. Give that kid a special test. Get him out. Oh, let me give you a warning, okay? I was in Paris about 2 months ago, and it was just a little vacation. I was on the East Coast. I had 7 days off. I said, well, I'll just go over there and I'll go to Paris. But let me give you a warning. If you're going over there, here's an example. Chapeau means hat. Ouf means egg. It's like those French have a different word for everything. I went over there thinking, you know, oh, everyone's going to speak English, no problem. I don't speak a word of French. It's a universal language, so I'll just be able to speak English. So I get off the plane, I get into a taxi. The first indication of trouble, I say to the driver, I'd like to go to a hotel, please. The driver turns and goes, Je te suis là tout de suite. What? What is that you're saying? So the first thing you do is really dumb. You think this will help. You adopt a French accent. I would like to go to the hotel. So that's nothing. So I went out, I bought a little French phrase book, hoping to memorize little phrases, you know, can I go to the bathroom and things like that. But French is not like Spanish. In Spanish, you can sound it out. It's easy for Americans. You know, every vowel is a syllable. You go, Casa de Pepe. Donde está Casa de Pepe? But French is like, Je me le dois. Le dois. What happened? What happened? He spoke French! Help him! So the only thing I could remember was cheese omelette. You know? Omelette du fromage. I'm practicing all the time. I'm the dude from Iowa.
I'm meeting people. Hey, I'm the dude from Iowa. Finally, I go into a restaurant and go, I'm le du fromage. And the problem, if you order in French, the waiter thinks you speak French. He goes, je te suis le du fromage? And you go, yes. And he brings you a shoe with cheese on it. And you also told him to force it down your throat.
I'll have a shoe with cheese on it, force it down my throat, and I want to massage your grandmother, okay?
I finally figured out the secret to ordering food. It's all sound effects. Went into a restaurant, wanted to order milk, eggs, and ham. I'm going to go, the waiter looked at me and goes, I beg your pardon.
Okay, enough comedy jokes.
All right.
What's your move, Wash?
Yeah, I remember when I had my first beer.
There is Steve Martin sharing his thoughts on the French. Thoughts we've all shared whenever François Legault shows up on the news. I've always been enamored by Quebec. It really can be like stepping right into Europe. You know, you cross the road and suddenly pickpockets are a chronic ailment. The folks in Quebec City walk with their pockets inside out to save the thieves from getting arthritis. But that's the real Canadian thoughtful style for you. And in their thoughtful Dixieland jazz style, here is Pete Fountain, A Closer Walk with Thee. Thank you. Martin, the king of cool, the man you think of when you see cigarette air and lounges and jazz. But deep down in his heart, he was a country boy, and his dabble into the Dixieland jazz was only the start of the honky-tonk of his career, going on later to do full-on country albums. So here he is, Way Down Yonder in New Orleans, by Dean Martin.
Way down yonder in New Orleans, in the land of the dreamy dreams, there's a Garden of Eden, that's what I mean. Creole babies with flashing eyes softly whisper with the tender sighs, stop, won't you give your lady fair a little smile? Yeah, stop. You bet your life you'll linger there a little while. Well, there is heaven right here on earth where those beautiful queens way down yonder in New Orleans. Down yonder in New Orleans, in the land of the dreamy dreams, there's a Garden of Eden, that's what I mean. Creole babies with flashing eyes softly whisper with the tender sighs, stop, won't you give your lady fair a little smile? Stop. You bet your life you'll linger there a little while. Well, there is heaven right here on earth where those beautiful queens way down yonder in New Orleans. Orleans.
Way down yonder, it looks like it's sleepy time down south. That is the show for us here tonight, and I hope you enjoyed yet again another installment of the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. Fun and laughs have been had, and you can even say you're an intellect now after that interview. Thank you to Marie Cassidy, Annamie Paul, Ella Fitzgerald, Steve Martin, Dean Martin, and a special thank you, of course, to you for listening. If you enjoyed, make sure you follow on Instagram at johnny.athens or on Facebook, Johnny Athens Entertainment, for all the updates and news about what's going on. To play us out, here he is once again, Pete Fountain, with his rendition of Basin Street Blues on 101.5 The Hawk FM.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Manley, silver medalist at the Calgary Olympics. Back then, I couldn't imagine the toll Alzheimer's disease would have on my family. If we don't act now, more than a million Canadians will be affected within a generation, including people like you and me. We can stop this disease. Research